Okay, the twisted confines of the mind of Dr. Strangelow, as written by Clyde Hightower, aka me, Nathan Sharp, part 1. I don't know where to start anymore. I've contemplated so many thoughts which have come and gone in a single flash, leaving me with the desire to share them, but it all feels just too overwhelming. The thoughts constantly come and go forever in a passing blur. They attack and torture me, allowing me to see great insight for a brief moment, only to leave me by myself again in a single instant, even more depraved, suffering in the carnage and ruin as my eyes are opened to the possibilities of a greater existence. As I look back on the years, they all seem so cliche and stereotypical, yet for me, unique and confusing as well. One thing I can say for sure though is that in the end, I wouldn't trade them for anything. I can only grasp onto my final remaining dream of sharing the knowledge and wisdom and lessons I've learned with the world while I still have the chance. I suppose I should start off by introducing myself. My name is Clyde Joseph Hightower, and I was born on the 11th day of July in the year 1983 to an Edward and Diane Hightower. During my youth, I was raised solely by my mother in the heart of New York City. To say I had a fucked up and abnormal childhood would be a major understatement. I could always sense I wasn't like my fellow peers, and part of me always felt excluded. Because of this, I always had felt a distinct, unique bitterness, and possibly even anger towards my parents, and I left home as early as I could. Perhaps I learned those feelings from my mother herself. From what I can remember as a child, she always seemed very resentful for being left on her own to raise my sister and I, understandably so, to some degree, but in my adolescent years, when I should have been in my prime sexual venue, I started to go through certain changes, and just based on what I had seen from living with her as a child, I felt like my mother carried a certain hatred for men that she subliminally took out on me. Now, don't get the wrong idea, she was never physically abusive or anything like that. In fact, she worked tirelessly to help support the three of us, her, me, and my sister. But I couldn't help but feel like subconsciously she always tried to make me feel as if I would never be good enough for any girl. And being brainwashed with those ideals since day one, well, they've tended to stick with me throughout my entire life, embedded within me as it were. I've always had a pretty big ego as well. I'm not even entirely sure myself where it originated, but there's always been that small, selfish voice in the back of my own consciousness trying to convince me that I'm smarter or more insightful or otherwise just more in tune with the world than the rest of our society. And this unwise fallacy may still ultimately prove to be my downfall. I wasn't popular during my youth, but I never really cared much about that, and thankfully I had gotten the chance to develop some extremely close bonds with friends over the course of the 5 years that I spent at my high school, seeing the same people on a daily basis. However, problems at home were consistently a distraction. They say there's two sides to every story, and I'll admit that I don't know for sure what happened prior to my birth. Of course, I have my own personal speculation, but I'll keep that to myself for now. I can only pass along the facts as I know them, and the fact of the matter was that, for some reason, my mother, an 11-month-old sister, had to seek shelter on the merciless streets of New York mere weeks before I was born, and from there on out, it had only been the three of us. For the first several years of my life, it was impossible for my mother to find work, as she had to stay home and care for my sister and I, and so we were forced to submit to the government and apply for welfare while we lived in the projects. As my sister and I grew up, we were eventually able to take on more and more responsibilities, and our beloved mother was finally able to start working again. She worked her fingers to the bones, 50 hours a week at times. Eventually, she was able to afford to move us from the ghetto and rent a small, two-bedroom house of our own. Instead of making us share, she let my sister, Amelia, and I each take a room of our own, while she slept on the couch in the living room each and every night. It was clear that she had nothing but love for her family. Meanwhile, I was just holding on and trying to do the best that I could. I tried, for the most part, to keep myself occupied with school, sports, and work. Between the three, I kept busy and usually had little free time. However, as soon as I was 18, I moved out in order to go to college. My mother had pushed me from the very start to make something of myself, so that made her proud, and frankly, I had waited my entire life to get as far away from my hometown as possible. I had always been made to feel like I didn't really belong anywhere, and I would lay awake at night, letting my mind race about the future and what the world held in store for me. Little did I realize I was letting some of the most precious time of my life slip through my fingers, time I would never get back again. Moving away to study literature at Harvard changed everything for me. The instant I actually got away from my sheltered hometown environment and out into the real world, I realized how truly unhappy I was with where I was going in life. Part of me couldn't help but feel like I had wasted my entire childhood and adolescent years, and by that point, I felt like it was too late. I felt completely lost. I had nobody in my life who truly knew me, and many days I felt like simply giving up and running away. It was impossible for me to see what I truly desired in my heart. I felt trapped. It turned out to be a very difficult and confusing time of my life, and I began to change profoundly, slowly becoming who I would be for the rest of my life, and I wasn't necessarily happy with who I saw when I looked in the mirror. Many of my old friends couldn't understand these sudden changes either, and I couldn't say that I blame them, but I maintained the notion that no one had been there for me when I needed them the most. The world had turned its back on me, and so I made a point to turn my back on the world. In my fourth and final year at college, by some remarkable miracle managing to earn all the credits I needed within that time, I came to the consensus that I needed a vehicle of my own. I mustered up as much inner strength as I could and concentrated on my academics, studying for several hours each night while also gaining part-time employment. By the time graduation came, I was averaging a grade point average of 3.4 and had saved up enough money to buy myself a used Pontiac Firebird from 1980. That ensuing night of graduation is one which I regard as the grand finale. A complete and total binge on mass quantities of drugs and alcohol with all my old college friends one final time with each other as a way to say goodbye. My relationships with virtually all of them had been slowly deteriorating for some time. It was depressing, as we had all been so close at one time, but they simply couldn't understand who I was as a person, or what I stood for, and I didn't really give them the chance to. I had constructed my life on a foundation of lies, and now I was merely trying to live up to the reputation and false images I had portrayed myself as, and it was really starting to take a stranglehold on my body, heart, mind, and soul. The best word I could use to describe that night would be bittersweet. I remember, somewhere amidst the drug-induced blackout haze, taking a moment to just stop and simply look around and take everything in. The music sounded a million miles away, and everyone seemed to be dancing in slow motion, as if I could see millions of individual frames per second, like I was watching a movie reel, one frame at a time. I had no idea where we were. The night had consisted of us moving from house to house whenever the police showed up to shut down the party at whichever one we were at. The endless supply of various drugs and booze was immensely indescribable. It would have put even Hunter Thompson to shame. With hundreds of college kids each contributing drugs of their choice to a collective stash, we accumulated an assortment that could most likely be regarded as a world record, and one which would have provided virtually enough evidence to have the cops walk us all away for consecutive life sentences, had we been caught. As the hour grew late, my night became quite emotional. These were people who had been with me from the very start. Words couldn't even begin to explain what I had seen or been through with some of them. They were all I had. This was a brotherhood, friends that would kill and die for each other. Little did they know that I had planned to run. I felt bad. I couldn't tell any of them or they would surely try to stop me, and I had made my decision. I didn't know if I would ever see any of them ever again. However, I knew that no matter how much I did or didn't dwell on those thoughts and feelings, there was nothing I could do to stop that night from ending, and gradually it faded to darkness as the chemicals overtook my consciousness. I awoke early the next morning, face down on my friend's living room floor. I sat up and looked at the clock. It read just after 7, and while I still felt a slight buzz from the previous night, for the most part I felt absolutely terrible, like I had been hit by a train. I slipped into my shoes and sauntered outside into the refreshing early morning air and sun, making my way to my car and getting in. I sat at the wheel for a moment or two with my eyes closed, exhausted, excited, nervous, all at the same time. My mind raced as I reached into my pockets and pulled out a lighter, keys, a Xanax, and a joint. I placed the pill in my mouth and swallowed it, and then rested the small joint between my lips and put the keys in the ignition, turning on the car before sparking the lighter, holding it to the end of the marijuana cigarette, or pinner, as we called them, and taking a couple of quick tokes to ensure that it was lit. I exhaled the sweet smoke after holding it in my lungs for a brief moment, and then threw the car into reverse, backing out of my friend's driveway. Best of luck, I wished all my friends, backing onto the road and shifting gears, pulling away from the house, bound for my own mission. I had waited for this moment for a long time. I would be lying if I said I wouldn't miss my friends, but the novelty and fun of our mutual situations had worn out long ago, and we would soon be completely dragged down by the daunting day-to-day pressures of our lives and mundane realities, and I knew that deep down they felt the same way. I would always cherish and treasure the experiences I had lived through with them, but enough was finally enough. I was beyond exhausted of merely going through the same old motions each and every day. I could only hope that our paths may meet up again someday, but that wasn't up to me to decide. All I knew was that I desperately needed a change.